everyone, and welcome to episode 76 of the Medieval Podcast. I'm Danielle Sabalski, also known as the 5-Minute Medievalist. Most of the time, my podcasts are about hopefully entertaining and teaching you some stuff and getting you interested in learning more stuff, but I'm always trying to be helpful to people as I'm doing this podcast, as I'm creating or writing articles. And so this week, I'm thinking everyone is going back to school soon if they haven't already, and there's a lot of people who are going back to post-secondary school and maybe studying medieval studies for the first time or coming back to it after a long time. And there's also a lot of people who are writing novels and stuff. How can I be helpful to you? Well, I thought I would come to you this week with some of the series that I've used and loved over the years that you can find especially primary sources in, so that when you're studying or when you're learning more about the Middle Ages, you have a good book that you can work from. So I'm going to tell you about a whole bunch of different book series that I've used and, like I said, loved over time. And I'll tell you a little bit about them, who it's for, what it contains, and how much you have to pay for it, because I think that's pretty important. There's only one outlier here, and that is I have one series of secondary sources I want to tell you about. The first thing I want to tell you before I really start is that nobody has paid me to endorse these books. They're just ones that I like. People do send me books. Publishers will send me books every once in a while to show me what's new in their catalog. But I make no promises to them to put their books on the podcast or to write about them at all. So people do send me books sometimes. These are just series that I've loved, and I'm not getting paid to promote them to you. So just so you know, these are ones that I honestly like, or I wouldn't be telling you about them. So the outlier I said I would tell you about is secondary sources. So full disclosure, there was a time when I worked for Arc Humanities Press, and the crew there is really awesome. But this series I want to tell you about is secondary sources that are a really good entry point into a whole bunch of topics about the Middle Ages that might be interesting or useful to you. And that's the Past Imperfect series. And I'm choosing this one not because Arc doesn't have a whole bunch of other great titles, but because these ones are intended to be a really quick introduction to a subject. And so they'll get you started kind of telling you what people have already learned about the subject, where the scholarship is at the moment, where it's going. And they have past and perfect books on like every subject. So ones that maybe you don't know a lot about, you want to know more about in a short format that's really actually easy to read, this is the series for you. It's called Past Imperfect. It's from Arc Humanities Press. And one of the books that actually you may have come across if you're listening to the podcast already is Byzantium Unbound, which is by Anthony Kaldelis. I came across that book through the Past Imperfect series. And it's one that gives you kind of an overview of what Byzantium is, what Byzantium studies are, and what its place is in medieval studies. So you can listen to the podcast to get the gist of that. But it gives you an idea of the past imperfect format. There's ones on Vikings, there's ones on gender, there's ones on anti-Semitism, there's ones on the Mongols. So pretty much any topic that you want to get kind of a crash course on from somebody credible, that is what Past Imperfect is for. So that's the only series of secondary sources I want to bring to you. The rest is going to be primary sources because that's what I work in the most, is primary sources. And I think it's a place where you need to find a lot of stuff. So that's secondary sources for you. Let's move into the primary sources. So the first series of primary texts I want to bring to you are the most expensive of the ones I'm going to mention to you. And that's the Dumbarton Oaks Medieval Library series from Harvard. And these are Latin texts. And I think it's important for us to know about a series of Latin texts that we can use, because most of the stuff that's written in the Middle Ages, especially in the earlier parts of the Middle Ages, the scholarly stuff especially, is written in Latin. So we need to be able to find some primary sources in Latin that are useful, that are good translations, and the Dumbarton Oaks series is good for that. So it's okay if you don't read Latin. These are translations. But what's beautiful about these, well, first of all, these books are gorgeous. If you look at them online, you'll see that they have this beautiful gold cover and they have a little ribbon in them and everything. So even if you know you've got them for a course that you're studying in school, you want to keep them forever because they're beautiful. But beyond that, on the inside, you have Latin text on the left page and you have English translation on the right page. And this is really, really useful, not only for people who are studying Latin, but for people who have some Latin or some French, Italian, Spanish, and they want to kind of compare the translation and see, like, where is this? Is the translation a good one? I mean, spoiler alert, they are good translations, but it is helpful to have the original text in front of you when you're looking at the translation as well. So the series is Dumbarton Oaks Medieval Library. It is fairly expensive, and that's because it's a kind of a niche market when you think about it, Latin texts for people to look at in translation. When I try and think for all of these, I'm trying to think of what's a knockout book that you might want to have on your shelf from this series. For me, it's The Rule of Saint Benedict, because if you're going to study the Middle Ages, you want to understand Christianity because, well, it's a huge part of culture in the Middle Ages in Europe, at least. And The Rule of Saint Benedict was hugely influential for monks and nuns at the time. If you listen to the podcast on monks not too long ago, you'll know The Rule of St. Benedict is hugely important. So The Rule of St. Benedict you can get from Dumbarton Oaks. It's the one that I told you about a couple weeks ago that's edited and translated by Bruce Elvenard. So this is a good one. This is the outstanding one I would pick from this series to tell you about. So yeah, Dumbarton Oaks Medieval Library is a good series when you need a Latin source in translation. It is a bit expensive, but, you know, sometimes quality is expensive. The second series I want to tell you about is the U of T Press series, A Reader. So all of the titles are something, A Reader. And they will have a whole bunch of small selections of primary source texts in translation. You only get the translation, you don't get the original source, which is okay. It's a place to start. So these are kind of medium expensive. I think that you get them a lot, especially in Canada, as texts that you'd have as part of a course because there are so many small primary sources in it. There are a whole bunch of these books, A Reader, on different things. Ones that I have on my shelf will come back to a lot are ones on the Viking Age, on medieval medicine, on witchcraft, on magic. So they have a whole bunch of these. Like I said, it's medium expensive. It's for people who only kind of want to have an overview of this subject. So like I said, the snippets are fairly small, maybe a page, two or three pages. So not very long. It's not going to give you a whole source of anything, but really to give you an idea of whatever the book's topic is, how that looked over the course of the Middle Ages. So if you have witchcraft, you know, you'll have stuff that's early on, maybe from the church fathers telling you about their ideas of magic to the Malleus Maleficarum at the end of the Middle Ages. So little bits of everything will be in there. Like I said, they're all in translation, so you don't have to worry about being able to read the original language, and that's very helpful. And they're cheaper than Dumbarton Oaks, but they're a totally different thing. Again, these are primary source texts to give you an overview. What is a knockout book from this series? If you're just trying to get a picture of the Middle Ages in general and just get an idea of things that often we get wrong about the Middle Ages, I would really recommend Medieval Towns, A Reader. And that's by Marianne Kowalewski. So she's the one who's collected all the primary sources in that, even if she hasn't done all the translations herself. So Medieval Towns, A Reader will give you a whole bunch of just small information. So stuff people talking about towns, town ordinances, little bylaws, things that tell you all sorts of things about medieval urban living in these primary source voices. I've realized I haven't actually mentioned what a primary source is. Those are the ones that are written in the Middle Ages. So Medieval Towns, A Reader is all sorts of actual medieval voices speaking about medieval towns. So Medieval Towns, I think, is a really good one when you're trying to just get started in the Middle Ages and learn about medieval towns. Like I said, it addresses a lot of myths that we have about the Middle Ages, like the fact that everything was filthy all the time. You'll see that gets busted a little bit in here. I do really like Medieval Medicine, which is by Faith Wallace. So that's one I've talked about before. And then one that I haven't seen yet, but I know it's going to be awesome. It's just come out, is Medieval Warfare, A Reader. And that one was compiled by Michael Livingston and Kelly DeVries. And I know how hard they worked on that. And I think it's going to be full of really great textual sources that not only talk about how you actually battle people, how you fight people, but also what the mentality around that is. So what are some standouts from U of T Press's A Reader series? Well, Medieval Towns, A Reader, and Medieval Warfare, A Reader. I recommend those two. Now we come to one of my favorite series of all time, because I've used it a lot, but that's because a lot of my work has been in English. It's been in Middle English. My degree is actually in English, although my specialization is in Middle English or Medieval English. It's the Teams Middle English Text series. So if you've read my articles or you listen to the podcast, you hear me referring to the Teams Middle English Text series a lot. And that's because they are super, super useful and well edited. Now, these, as a price point, they're okay. They can be expensive. It really depends on which one you're looking at, how fat it is as a book, and how often it might need to be used. So that's kind of all over the place as a price point. But that's if you want a physical copy. If you just want to read it, you can go online and read the Teams Middle English Text series for free. They have it all online. And that's with the edited notes and everything, the textual sources, all of that stuff is there online. You can just read it anytime, which I think is brilliant. This series was meant for students, so the way that it speaks to you, the type of notes it has, are for an audience that doesn't already have their PhDs. And I think that's a really great audience to have chosen for the series. The thing to mention about the Teams Middle English Text series is that these are Middle English texts. So you're not going to find stuff in other languages. You're not going to find a really easy translation of this. These aren't translations. These are the original texts. So that means that you have to be or get pretty comfortable with Middle English, depending on what era your book is from. So if it's something from the 15th century, you might be okay. The English should be pretty smooth for an English speaker now. For somebody who's comfortable with Chaucer, especially, you can read that stuff fairly easily. The stuff that's earlier on is harder to read. But the editors of this series they've taken that to heart when they were editing the series, in that they know that these books are aimed at students who are not going to, you know, be reading Middle English from the cradle. So they do have notes that tell you kind of translations of certain words here and there that will be helpful to you. So you don't necessarily have to already come to this knowing Middle English. The expectation is that you don't, but the more Middle English you have, or the more you've practiced, the easier it'll be to read these things. So it is worth mentioning that these are in the original language. That's really helpful when you're actually studying Middle English, because you can see the evolution of the language as you go. And for a language geek like me, that's fantastic. Also, you know, you get to really stretch your vocabulary reading Middle English, which I think is another benefit. So the series... What is the series? Teams Middle English Text Series. Who's it for? It's for people who are just coming to Middle English, so it's very friendly. It is in the original language, though. It's fairly expensive if you get the text themselves, but you can read them all online for free, which is invaluable, and I'm just so grateful to these people for doing this. It's just been amazing from the time I was a student to now. I mean, it's still hard to afford all these books, right? So it's great that it's online. What is a knockout book from this series? Well, I mean, I could pick so many of these. They have Ancrenawissa, they have The Book of Marjorie Kemp, they have Robin Hood Tales, they have Tales of Gawain, so like all my favorite stuff is there. But if I had to pick just one for people who are kind of coming into the Middle Ages and they want to learn more, as much as possible, perhaps from one book or two, I would pick the complete Harley 2253 manuscript. Now, this is actually in three volumes, but it is a collection from a medieval miscellany. So that means that it's got stuff in here that is sacred. It's got stuff in here that's secular. It's got stuff that's really across the board. Romances, Christian texts, lyrics. It's got everything in it. And it gives you kind of a picture of the stuff that people collected in their books, because, as you'll know, when people put together medieval books, they were putting together whatever they wanted in it. It's almost like a binder. You just throw whatever you want in it. Copy only the text that you want. So I would pick the complete Harley 2253 manuscript. because it's got like a real cross section of the things that you'd find in a medieval miscellany. So that would be the one I would pick. Another great series of primary texts is from Broadview Press. And these ones are in translation. They're in English. You can access them really easily. They've got good notes. They're usually small and cheaper. They're cheaper than, for example, the Dumbarton Oaks series again. But again, they're a totally different thing. They're translations of primary sources. And they're very good and very useful. You know, slim volumes sometimes, you know, when you're an academic, maybe you look at this sideways because it's too small. The Broadview editions are really great. So these little books are very useful. There's a whole bunch of them on different primary sources. They're not all ones that are in English. Some of them are, some of them aren't. But you do get them in translation, which is helpful. What are some knockout books from this series? Well, I would definitely recommend Beowulf by R.M. Musa. That's the translation by R.M. Musa. Of all the editions of Beowulf that I've read, this one really flows to me. It really translates this poem well in a way that is still beautiful, it's accurate, and it also has a lot of good notes. So that is a knockout edition from Broadview Press of all of their primary sources. One that I really love that's from Broadview Press is the Distaff Gospels. It's probably not one that you need to have on your shelf at the beginning of your medieval journey, but it's one that I just really love. This one is translated by Madeleine Jay and Kathleen Garay, and it's a whole collection that's meant to be a whole bunch of medieval women that are talking about advice for people. So it's got all their jokes and superstitions and things like that. And it's not necessarily meant to be taken seriously. There is talk that it's probably just meant to make fun of women. I think in a lot of ways it is, but it's just kind of a fun, source to read. And sometimes I think you need fun sources to read. So the Broadview Press series, primary sources in translation, they're really quite good and inexpensive. It's for people who are, again, just starting their journey into medieval studies. It's aimed at students, so it's not going to be stuff that's super challenging. It is in modern English, so easy to read. So then we come to the cheapest stuff. I think that you will come across Penguin editions of pretty much any medieval text that you might like. Penguin Books, of course, you can find them anywhere. Peter and I talked about some of these not too long ago. And you find them, they're always these beat up paperbacks. The more beat up they are, the better they are, I think, especially if you're reading them on the subway or something. But they have stuff that is in translation from all sorts of medieval cultures, right? So you can find stuff from China, you can find stuff from mainland Europe, you can find stuff from Britain, for example. You can find all sorts of medieval texts. These are really, really cheap, but that doesn't mean that they're bad. Penguin is a powerhouse. That means they can put out these cheap paperbacks that are done by people who know what they're talking about. So Penguin Books, even though they're cheap, doesn't mean that they're bad editions. I think that every medievalist I know has at least a few Penguin Books on their shelf. You can see the distinctive black books with the orange writing. Everybody has them. No shame. They are good books. What the definite advantage of Penguin Books is the price point. They're really easy to get, and you can find them everywhere. Used bookstores, go to it. They should have them, especially if it's a used bookstore near your campus. They're going to have copies of stuff that people have passed on. Who are they meant for? Well, they're meant for a general readership, so not necessarily students, but it does mean that the language used in them is not too difficult, right? It's modern English. It's not going to be all that heavy lifting for people who are new to the Middle Ages. Some of the language in some of the older Penguin books is old-fashioned. I wouldn't say like archaic, but it is old-fashioned. And sometimes that is done to kind of give you a sense that the books that were written, the way they're written, is meant to sound old-fashioned. Something like Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, there's speculation that that was meant to sound like it was more old-fashioned than it is. So you'll see that kind of language in some of the Penguin translations. What's a knockout book from the Penguin series of paperbacks? Well, jeepers, you can find anything you want. I mean, let's pick something that's good for people to look at. If you're looking at medieval Europe, you can get a Penguin Mallory. That's all right. It's cheap and you'll be able to read whatever you want. So the Mort d'Arthur, you can find it. It's going to be cheap. That's useful. That is one that I actually don't have on the shelf. I have the Norton, which is really good as well. Marco Polo, Marco Polo's Travels. That's really useful to have because, I mean, there are some people that might assume that you've read it. You can get Boccaccio, the Decameron. You can get all sorts of books. You can get most of the major well-known works from the Middle Ages in Penguin paperback. And there's something to be said for that. So again, if you're a person who's just kind of starting your journey into the Middle Ages and you're looking at the bookstore and you see there's two editions of something and one of them is the Penguin version and you don't have a lot of money in your pocket, it's okay. You can get the Penguin one. And if it's something that you love and work with a lot, then maybe, you know, get a more expensive or a more scholarly edition later. But yeah, no shame. Penguin books, everybody has them. It's okay. You can read them and add them to your collection. So that is a whole range of primary source series that you can look at, that you can get. They're all different in the things that they're offering and how they offer them. So I hope that's helpful to you. But because I don't know about you, but I'm finding it difficult to actually concentrate on stuff these days. You don't need to work all the time. If you want, don't work all the time. Goodness, you're going to be useless if you've burned out by the end of September. So what are some good medieval fiction series that you can read? Just because they're fiction doesn't mean that they are not worth your time. So what are some that you can read? Something for everybody here. If you want to read a mystery series, you need to go with my friend Candace Robb, who was on the podcast last year. Her Owen Archer series is my favorite of all her series. We want to start with The Apothecary Rose. And these books, they're set in 14th century York, which is my jam. They are good mysteries and you can't always tell who done it. But Candace is somebody who has a PhD. She knows what she's talking about. You can trust her. So if you want to kind of live in the Middle Ages without having to read in Middle English for a little while, I'd recommend the Owen Archer series by Candace Robb. And I mean, listen to the podcast with her and you'll find out what a lovely person she is as well. So that can make you feel good while you're reading too. I mean, if you haven't read Lord of the Rings, now is the time to do that. I mean, I'm always seeing people on Twitter who are passionately for and against Lord of the Rings. Some of the writing is super beautiful. If I was an editor, I'd probably have made it shorter. But hey, everybody's got an opinion on Lord of the Rings. It's not going to tax your brain too much. So if you want to read that while you're doing your medieval courses, you will see as you start to go through medieval studies how much Tolkien has taken and used for that series. And if you're also kind of reading medieval studies now in 2020, you'll also see some of the things that are both useful in these books and also very problematic in these books. So as you start learning more about the Middle Ages, it's worth taking a look at Tolkien if you haven't, just to get a sense of what people are talking about when they're talking about him now. If you like fantasy, you want to go with Guy Gabriel Kay. It's a bit of a cheat, perhaps, in a podcast on series because his books are not necessarily series, but all of his books are, they're based on the Middle Ages and they're just slightly fantastic. So you can take those and read them and feel like you are still kind of engaged with and learning about the Middle Ages. These books are not all based on Europe either, so that's useful. I had him on the podcast last year talking about A Brightness Long Ago, so, you know, you can listen to him talking about his work as well. So fantasy, if you like fantasy or stuff that's just slightly fantastic, Guy Gabriel Kay is somebody that you can read as well. And finally, if you are like me and you're very, very tired at the end of the day, you just want something that is a simple, fun romance, I'm going to give to you. And I know I'm leaving myself vulnerable because people are always going to be like, what romance? But I would recommend the Highlands series by Alison MacLean. These are probably not super well known yet, but they're getting to be well known in the romance community. Now, I can say as a medievalist, a lot of the details are good in this. She does stick with the whole plaid thing, which is not strictly correct. But I mean, you're going to set a romance in the Highlands. I think, you know, you have some poetic license there, but a lot of the details are quite good. And they're fun and they're easy and, well, they're super racy as well. The first book in that series is called Highland Promise. It's probably my favorite of them. I mean, I'm not going to be the fun police. If you want to read something that is just fun and easy, go for it. You can read the Highland series by Alison MacLean. Now, as kind of a final word on this, if I was going back to myself as an undergraduate that's just starting to learn about medieval studies, well, it'd be a couple books that I'd want to have kind of just on my shelf to go back to and go back to. These series I've told you about as primary source texts are invaluable. I think that when you're learning about a culture, learning about it in as close to their own voices as possible is super important. You get a real sense of the patterns in which people spoke, the topics they spoke about, the way in which they speak about stuff. I think that's super important, which is why I'm recommending primary source texts to you. But if I could pick kind of just one book to supplement this, and this is one I've mentioned before on the podcast and in my work, it's Medieval Life, Archaeology and the Life Course by Roberta Gilchrist. And I think this is a really important book because it just gives you a sense of just the smallest details of medieval life. So you can come to this as a place to start. So like you're reading, I don't know, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, you want to learn more about girdles. You can go to Medieval Life, Archaeology and the Life course, and you can find out about girdles. You can find out what they were used for. These were often wedding gifts, for example. What are the archaeological finds that we've had related to this? And you can find out these small details to do with life that I think are really important. This book is written, I would say, for students. It looks like a textbook to me. The language is not inaccessible by any stretch, but it's not for high school students. So it's just a really good book that, again, has small little details that are going to be useful to you if you're reading literature, primary sources, and you want to find out more about these small details. I think that perhaps archaeology is not something that's often put into a lot of history syllabi, or archaeological papers perhaps are not things that you come across. So when you can find it in one book that's accessible, I think that's really important. So if I could give a gift to my undergraduate self, I would give myself Medieval Life, Archaeology and Life course by Roberta Gilchrist. It's one that I come back to again and again as kind of a jumping off point for the stuff that I still do. And I think it's really useful. And if you're somebody who writes novels and you're listening to this for more ideas about how to write novels, this is also a good resource to have. It is pretty expensive because it's niche, but if you want to make an investment, I think it's worth it. You can get a good sense of this book by looking on Google Books, but it's one that you want to have on the shelf, in my opinion. And then finally, I would recommend my own book. Why? Because it's my podcast, but also because I specifically wrote this book as a way for people to kind of get an entry into the Middle Ages. So, I mean, I would be remiss in not mentioning this book. And my book is Life in Medieval Europe, Fact and Fiction. And I've laid it out in a way that I'm hoping is useful to people. I mean, I'm hoping it's entertaining, right? You can read it start to finish and learn some stuff about the Middle Ages in a way that is hopefully funny and useful. But I've also arranged it according to questions that people ask, very common questions people ask about the Middle Ages. So I wrote it in a way that would be a format that you could use to just jump into and just kind of answer your own questions as they come up, or as they come up again. So say you're reading a novel or you're reading a primary source, you want to know a little bit, just a little bit about what people's opinions were on a certain subject, you can go to my little book and just get, again, a jumping off point, a little synopsis in a way that's not super taxing on your brain. So this is what the book is written for. So I do recommend it. You should read it. If you're starting your journey into the Middle Ages, why not start with a summary of what life is like in medieval Europe? Just as a place to start. I think that's fair. I mean, people tell me that I'm too modest for my own good. So this is me like working against my nature, perhaps, and recommending this book that I've written. I worked really hard on, by the way, to be useful to people. So there you go. So again, in the spirit of being useful, hopefully you'll find these things useful. All of the series that I've mentioned, primary texts that you can use, that you want to have on the shelf, or that you can just access online in the case of Teams. And just kind of get yourself started, get yourself immersed in the Middle Ages. And these are books that professionals use as well. So if you're using them, you don't need to feel like a student. You can feel like one of us, one of the team, as you're reading primary sources from the Middle Ages. So I do hope you find these helpful. Before we go, here's Peter from medievalist.net to tell us what's on the website. What's new, Peter?
Hey. Well, we have a lot of new posts came out over the last week. Andrew Latham has started a new series on Robin Hood. So looking at the man, the myth, legend. So it's the first of four pieces went up this last weekend. And we're going to have next 3 weeks have the others go up as well. So if you want to get your Robin Hood fix, that would be that.
Sweet.
Yes, we also have pieces. They're really popular. Vikings and the Byzantine Emperor. So it looks at a 10th century source written by a Byzantine emperor talking about the Vikings. That was really popular over the weekend. And also we have the Medieval Journeys of Alexander the Great.
Ooh, those are always fun.
Yes, up into the sky and under the sea.
Yeah, exactly. I love those ones. Sounds awesome. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks.
Thank you to all of our patrons on patreon.com for all your support. Whether you're in it for the sweet deals on Medieval Warfare Magazine, the Medieval Magazine, our book club, or our brand new and exclusive maps illustrated by Tina Ross, thank you from the bottom of my heart. If you're interested in becoming a patron of the Medieval Podcast, you can find out more about all our rewards at patreon.com/medievalists. For everything from book recommendations to medieval students' letters home, follow medievalist.net on Facebook or Twitter at medievalists. You can follow me, Danielle Sabalski, on social media at 5MIN Medievalist or 5 Minute Medievalist. And you can find all my books, including Life in Medieval Europe, Fact and Fiction, on Amazon. Our music is Beyond the Warriors by Guy Frog. Thanks for listening, and have yourself a wonderful day.